Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Maya Norfleet. Let's talk about the Gen Z stare. The discourse around young adults ages 18 to 28 and the conversation around the blank, expressionless gaze has older generations, including millennials, asking, are they okay? Some assume younger adults are ruder, defaulting to the stereotypical adage, kids these days. Others worry that young people are overly traumatized, and of course there's the camp that blames technology, smartphones, and social media. Now, before I go any further, I want to be sure everyone understands that I am not lumping all Gen Zers in a box. Every person you meet that's in Gen Z have their own opinions and their own lived experiences, which is why I talk to a few. 21-year-old Justin Boyle from St. Louis shared his thoughts on how he and other Gen Zers view and navigate social norms.
You know, the decline in social skills as far as it relates to like small talk, just general human decency and how we like interact with each other, kind of like the pleasantries of life. I think we are shifting to a place where like, you know, things like that just don't happen as commonly, especially with online interactions being some people's, like, especially like Gen Z's, like that's our default modality of communication. So some of those things that are kind of like muscles that you had to build up, like I remember like having to like observe my mom, like I was always wondering like why is she like just saying hey and like walking past people in the grocery store. That's something that like I had to learn, that I can imagine that like, you know, if you only really started having like social interactions during like, you know, high school, and then, you know, the pandemic kind of cut some things off for you socially, I can see how that would be a thing.
And we have Gen Zers here at STLPR. 22-year-old newsroom intern Olivia Mizell said that she hadn't heard of the Gen Z stare until recently.
I had never heard of the Gen Z stare until I started seeing videos about it on social media. But as someone who has worked a lot of customer service jobs and worked at a lot of restaurants, it is very possible that I have done it to some customers accidentally. So I definitely related to some of the videos I saw, but I think there is maybe some merit to the criticism about it.
When it comes to how older generations perceive Gen Z employees and colleagues, STLPR visuals intern and Gen Zer Lily Gibbs shared that she does not appreciate how Gen Z is perceived as lazy. The 21-year-old said a lot changed right before she and her peers entered the workforce.
I know so many people that are hardworking and striving for success in this generation. But one thing to keep in mind is that a lot of Gen Z got their first job after COVID, which changed so much. And I think it has completely changed the way that the workplace is viewed and how it operates. I mean, we have so many people that work remotely now, and it just really changed everything.
So what else are we missing when we criticize and poke a little fun at Gen Z? Ashley Wilkinson, clinical site supervisor at Provident Behavioral Health, says it's a combination of isolation due to culture and world events like COVID-19, neurological development, and changing realities of childhood and adolescence. And we're going to talk all about it. Ashley, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Hey, Mai, thanks for having me.
So when I first got hip to the Gen Z stare, I did the auntie thing and kind of just blamed too much screen time. You know, Gen Z is the first generation to live their entire lives with social media and mobile devices. So in what ways has social media come up when talking to young adults about their mental health?
Yeah, I mean, talking to young adults about their mental health with social media, you can get kind of the best of both worlds and also the worst of both worlds.
Okay.
So you may have them talk about how pivotal it is for them, how it's really crucial to connecting them to their friends. Snapchat is a huge communication device and connector and social instigator for a lot of young adults these days. But you also have research showing us that that can also lead to greater isolation and I was actually at a at the Jefferson County Mental Health Summit this weekend, and they had a researcher talking about how it's not necessarily the amount of time you spend on social media, but what you look at.
Okay. What do you mean by that? Like, what are they looking at?
That's... Yeah. So if you're, it's more about disposition, they were saying, than it is actually about demographic. And so one of the things that we're seeing come up a lot is that if you're the type of personality that is going to be looking for on your social media and like putting in it to the algorithm things that are about how lonely you are or how discouraged you're feeling or things like that, that it's going to show you more people feeling that way, or it's going to show you more content that will tend to make you feel more lonely and depressed and isolated. Whereas if you have a personality that's really wanting to connect with the world out there and look at travel and look at how people live, you're going to, the algorithm will feed you that. Mm-hmm. So it's less about how much time they're spending on the social media platforms and more about the type of content that is being, that they're searching for and then being fed.
It's kind of like the algorithm is giving people confirmation bias.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That makes sense. And that's also scary.
I wasn't. It kind of surprised me. Like, I think it was been one of the like little clips of like, oh, they just spend all their time on screens. And so to have research that was like, yeah, I mean, eventually there's a diminished return of dopamine for spending a ton of time online. But it was actually about that, like what we feed into it actually gets put back out.
And I've also heard like the actual act of bullying and being bullied has kind of led to this aversion of seeming cringe, which is basically just being embarrassing. Is this a bad thing?
Being embarrassing, being a bad thing.
Or being afraid to be like cringy, kind of like it makes, what I've seen, it makes young people kind of afraid to just be themselves or to speak up because they're nervous about what perceptions will come to them.
Yeah. I think on one hand, I really appreciate how Gen Z tries to be really aware of how other people are feeling and how their actions and their words can affect other people. I think they cool thing about this generation is they're very attuned to how other people are feeling. But at the same time, like you just mentioned, that can kind of almost imitate a freeze response, which is a trauma response, to where even little, I'm doing quotes, air quotes, little risks feel insurmountable. And so that can kind of, that can be a really difficult social experience for them.
I started our conversation ragging on mobile devices like cell phones and tablets and such, which is funny because I'm almost always staring at a screen myself. Many of us are. But many adults remember, you know, playing outside and hanging out at malls, being face to face with our friends. For Gen Z, though, how has technology kind of changed in which the way that they communicate and socialize to the point where we're collectively discussing how they stare at us?
Yeah. So I totally resonate with that. I was just thinking, it's my family, we went camping this weekend, and I was thinking about how I would just go off for hours. I grew up in a small town. I would just be outside, and like my mom didn't know where I was or what I was doing. I'd come home when I was hungry. Being outside and around people, you're going to have way more vitamin D, which is going to help with your energy level and your pep, which having facial expressions like nobody can see right now, but I'm doing them, takes energy to do. But there's also this thing called mirror neurons. And so that happens when we're face to face. We watch another person's face as we're talking, as they're talking, and we learn from that interaction literally in our brains. We have neurons called mirror neurons that mirror the other person and learn from them. So when we have a lot of our time socially being taken up and a lot of our social learning experience is coming from a screen, we're losing out on some of those mirror neurons that we get from being live and in action with other people.
Which I guess is why so many older generations are put off by them expressing and showing emotion and then being met by some Gen Zers, not all, but enough, where there's just like nothing given back. And it's like, oh, what did I do? What did I say?
Yeah. I think one of the things I've really, again, appreciated about Gen Z is they, I'm wondering how much of it is like this neural piece, and then maybe we'll get to this later, but also could be just like authenticity. Like they're all about the, I'm not going to pretend with my face.
Right.
So that also can be off-putting or at least disorienting, I think, to older generations, because we've been taught, at least I was, millennial, very much my face needs to be pleasant and polite. I'm from the South, so I need to be polite in my facial expression. And I appreciate that Gen Z doesn't do nice for nice sake.
So is there something, like, is it real? Is the Gen Z stare a real thing? Like, have you experienced before? And what are your thoughts on it, personally?
Okay, personally. Honestly, when we talked about it the other day, I had not heard that phrase, the Gen Z stare. So it caught me off guard. So I'm not familiar with the term itself. When I think about my experience with Gen Z, it comes up. Like, when you say that and you explain what it is, I go, oh, yeah, I kind of think I know what that is. But for me, it's not been a huge experience with them. So I don't know what factors go into that. And, like, are they more likely to use it in certain situations? And I've just not been in those with them in therapy, which is when you would think they would use it. But, it made sense to me when you said it. But it's not something that I would have been like, oh, yeah, all the time, Gen Z stare.
When you talk to other people, like, that was your first time hearing that term, but, like, when you talk to other folks, like, have they heard about it?
Or
did the algorithm start picking it up and start showing
you
more?
Start showing it to me now that I Googled it. I kind of got a mixed bag again. And I think some of the research is reflecting this, too, of, like, for some people, they're like, this is such a real thing. This is absolutely going on. I see it all the time. And other people are like, well, I mean, it could be a lot of things. I'm not really seeing it as much. So it's one of those things that I think we just need more time to kind of observe it.
Kind of knowing what it is now. Do you have, like, any examples of when you've seen it? Like, for me personally, when I introduce myself to, like, my nephew's friends, and I'm, like, bubbly, like, trying to be the cool TT or whatever, and they just were like, hi. I'm like, oh.
Yes.
What are your experiences, or at least that you can recall, that's like, oh, that's probably the stare?
Yeah, I think that now, going back, I wonder about the stare. But some of the examples that come to mind are, again, like, you know, a family brings their Gen Zer in for a session, or I hear about it from one of my staff who's seeing a Gen Z person as a client. But especially at, like, a family member, some of those introductions, right, that you're talking about. And they're like, okay, now tell us about yourself, or tell us why you're here. And there's just this look of, like, I don't want to be here, so I'm not going to act like I need to be here. I'm not going to, like, there's this kind of flatness. And I think in the past, I've just kind of put that in the category of, like, going to therapy is awkward sometimes. Like, it's hard. And when it's not your idea, it's really uncomfortable.
Right.
But I'm wondering now how much of that was also flavored with some of this Gen Z stare.
And we should be clear, the Gen Z stare has gained attention on social media for some time now. And it's more commonly written about in, like, the mainstream media. NBC had a really big story on it, New York Times, too. And this was just in the last month. And like I said, my own, like, experiences with young people, I'm like, I'm not old, but so why are you treating me like...
Exactly. I'm just trying to be nice.
Right. We need to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation about the mental and emotional well-being of Gen Z. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. I'm Maya Norfleet, in for Elaine Cha. Now back to our conversation with Ashley Wilkinson, Clinical Site Supervisor for Provident Behavioral Health. We're discussing the mental well-being of Gen Z and what's behind that seemingly blank Gen Z stare. Ashley, before the break, we talked about the role that cell phones and social media has played in Gen Z's social and emotional learning. But the actual development of the brain also plays a huge role in how this younger generation moves about life. And I've heard before that our brains aren't fully developed until we're 25. And right now, Gen Z are between 13 and 28-year-olds. Like, that's the entire generation age range as of today. Is that blank stare, could it have something to do with the brain still being a little mushy? Like, what's going on there?
I am an absolute nerd when it comes to brain science. So this is...
Tell me all the nerdy stuff.
You just tell me to slow down. Research does show and continues to show that the brain finishes developing around the age of 23 to 25.
Okay.
And so that's mainly the prefrontal cortex, which is right here behind your forehead. That is the last part of the brain to develop. So the brain develops kind of from the inside out. So there's inner parts of your brain that develop first that control things like breathing and movement, and then your emotions come into it next. And then all of that, like, regulation, thought processing, decision making, all of that comes last, is developed last. So that, yeah, I think it's a huge part of the conversation for sure.
Are there any factors that could possibly delay the development of the prefrontal cortex? And if so, what are they?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a few. Some of those things can be I think it was Justin was talking about earlier, of just what you were exposed to and what types of interactions you were exposed to as you were younger, and you're getting, again, those mirror neurons firing at an early age. If you grew up more isolated and having less opportunity to do that, that can severely impact. So we have research from children in orphanages that were adopted, you know, pretty later in life, like that can be really difficult. So trauma is a big word that gets thrown around a lot here, because what trauma does is it can kind of fracture things in your brain so that there's like, it's like a big construction site, right? So already we've got the adolescent into the young adult brain is just like a constant construction zone because it's being developed.
Yeah.
And that's if everything's going well, it's still being developed. Mm. But if you throw things like trauma like we had the storms come by in May, right? So natural disasters, things that go on in our culture and in our world, those things will come in and wreak havoc on the construction site, making it even more difficult. So those are a few of the things that can come up.
And you mentioned Justin. We're talking about Justin Boyle, who's a 21-year-old Gen Zer who shared some of his thoughts on the Gen Z stare and the mental and emotional development of himself and his generation. When you talk about those factors that could delay the development, you mentioned trauma. You mentioned the tornadoes on May 16th. So how prevalent are these factors, especially like around trauma? How prevalent are those in Gen Z?
There's a couple of encouraging things that we're actually seeing as far as like the rates of suicide and depression. Mm-hmm. We've seen a little bit of a decrease the last couple of years in Gen Z. But overall, between like 2009-2019, we had just mental health escalating in a negative pattern. Over 57% was what some of the stats were showing. So it's been, I think they've had a lot of complex layering factors that went for the Gen Z generation, that they have a lot that they have to work through and that they've had to deal with, and they haven't necessarily been equipped even biologically to engage with some of those things in the way that I think millennials and previous generations will maybe be more used to.
Yeah. I mean, I think every generation could definitely speak to something traumatic, big, sad, bad that happened in those developmental years. There's always a war of some sort. There's always some sort of awful event that can cause a lot of that stress and depression and anxiety. So what specifically makes the experiences of Gen Z so different?
Yeah. Well, I think it kind of touches on what we said a minute ago of it being so layered. I'm a millennial. There's jokes all over. We use Facebook because we're old, but there's jokes all over the place with memes of like we just are kind of existing from one crisis to the next. Mm-hmm. and I think Gen Z, like you said, that's not necessarily unique to any one generation. But one of the things that really sets Gen Z apart is, I mean, we're going to kind of wrap back around, but the use of technology is a big, big difference for any of the other generations. We never had something at our fingertips that we could kind of go away to in that type of way. Typically, we would find other people that shared a similar experience.
Right.
Or if we were away long enough, someone would notice. Mm-hmm. But one of the things with these, with the social media and with phones and technology, is you can go away and be and feel like you have a sense of connection. And not all of it is bad, but it can definitely lead to a sense of almost like faux connection, where you're not receiving the relational component necessarily. You get like a short-term dopamine hit. Mm-hmm. But it ends up resembling addiction a lot more than like real relationship.
Yeah.
And so I think while it can give Gen Zers a lot of, like, again, that hit at the beginning, it feels better. Mm-hmm. I think long term, that's been one factor that's really set them up for really struggling as far as isolation and that lower desire to, like, the risk, more risk averse.
Yeah, and that isolation too, like coming out of a global pandemic where the whole thing was stay in the house,
right,
stay away from everybody because we don't know how this virus works, and for Gen Z, that's happening like middle school and high school for them.
Right. You and I had some building blocks to go off of, especially socially going into that experience. And it was still, I mean, hell for so many people. But Gen Zers were really in the prime of developing their social and emotional like muscles. Mm-hmm. And so that is a huge factor.
There's something also to be said about how parenting has changed from generation to generation. And I've heard of like helicopter parenting, which is just like a parent just cannot keep their eyes and their opinions are just always just hovering over their babies. But I've only just heard the term lawnmower parenting from comments on our St. Louis Public Radio Facebook page. Again, Facebook because we're older. and when we asked about misconceptions about Gen Z from an older generation's perspective, Joel Emery wrote, "The biggest and unique challenge is the outcome of having lawnmower parents." And that was followed up by Angela Mitchin, who wrote, "Lawnmower parents don't wait for their kids to encounter obstacles. They remove perceived threats before their kids ever come up against them. It leads to adults with very poor social skills and ability to cope with hardship, anxiety, etc." Now, this is all happening just on our Facebook page, right? Is what Joel and Angela shared valid?
I have observed it and experienced. I think it's absolutely a thing. I've heard about lawnmower parents. And again, I am a parent of two boys, and I want every parent that's listening to know that I know that we mean well. We mean so well. We love our kids. And that doesn't always work out for us. So lawnmower, absolutely. If there's, again, out of the desire to protect our children, which feels like a big identity marker as a parent, right? I'm part of my job is to protect my kids. Yeah. One of the ways that has started to be more popular is to really, kind of grease the wheels and just any possible obstacle. Let's remove that. Let's make sure that they have it better than we did. Let's remove some of these stressors and these anxiety producing situations. They've even noticed that in the way like that playgrounds were constructed. We're putting in all these safety things, right? And we're not allowing people to take risks. I was camping this weekend with my kids, and there was some seesaws. And my husband and I are both looking at it going, "You don't ever see seesaws at playgrounds anymore."
Yeah.
And again, there's some reasoning behind that. Both of my children almost got hurt so many times. But again, we're taking away out of, I really do believe, this goodwill and this good intent to make things easier. When things are easy, we don't grow. Like challenge and risk is actually where our bodies, our brains, our souls, that's where we mature. That's where we grow and figure out that, hey, we can handle this because I've handled something like it before. So if I really have not experienced a lot of times of challenge where I've had to overcome something, my brain doesn't hold the memory of that. My body doesn't hold the memory of that. Mm. And so even, again, quote unquote, smaller risks can feel really, really unmanageable and overwhelming.
What is it about millennial and Gen X parents that create things like helicopter and lawnmower parenting? Like, what happened to us?
I think that's going to be the ongoing conversation for every generation is, what happened to us? And, we can point fingers all the way back to however many generations back. One of the factors, though, that is real in that is that the baby boomer generation moving into Gen X and millennial is – that the baby boomers went through incredible hardship and were very much on their own for a lot of it. A lot of them became adults very young and had to be the adult in their life from a very young age and had to just deal with things and come up there very resilient in a lot of ways, still are. So then raising children, it was almost the opposite of the lawnmower helicopter effect of like, hey, yeah, they'll be fine.
Yeah.
Hey, wipe that snot off your nose. You don't need to cry about that. Like, you'll be fine. It's a different approach to trying to build resiliency with negative side effects as well, right? So it's almost like the pendulum swing of for Gen Xers and millennials like myself. We watch there's something called the still face experiment. I don't know if you've heard about that.
Tell me more.
So the still face experiment was done. I'm not going to be able to pull up the year right now. But they essentially they were doing attachment studies on how do children react when their parents are not responding to their distress. So in the experiment, the parents playing with the child, and then on cue, they turn away from the camera, turn back, and they go, they go Gen Z stare.
They do the Gen Z stare, but back in the day.
Back in the day. And they just stare at the kid. And the first response typically is that the kid will keep trying to play and keep trying to get the parents' attention. And then they'll start to escalate and trying to get the attention. Then they'll move towards misbehaving to get even negative attention. Oh. And then eventually they'll sink into basically a depressive, like with like a stupor almost, where they're like sullen and withdrawn. It's really heartbreaking when you watch it.
Yeah.
But I think part of what had the felt experience, I think, of some Gen Xers and millennials was this sense of unintended still face from their baby boomer parents, wow. At least emotionally. Mm-hmm. And again, there are reasons why baby boomers maybe were not equipped to engage at that on that in that way emotionally. But so then moving into having your Gen Z kids, there's kind of a swap to
yeah.
I'm here and I'm watching you all the time and look how attuned I am to you and I'm going to be able to like know all the things that are coming before you even know that they're coming and I'm going to help you with this. And it's
right.
like this overcorrection huh. that, again, still doesn't lead to someone who has had to experience stress or normal anxiety. Anxiety is actually a really healthy thing for you to have. We wouldn't survive as a species without it. So it feels like we're ping ponging and no one's ever going to do it completely right. But we can learn every generation from the one that came before us.
Wow. Incredible. That's given me a lot of food for thought, even as I watch my nephews grow up. Like, oh,
mm-hmm.
I'm recalling things where you just say, I'm like, I do that.
I can know all this stuff and I still do it.
While every generation has something heavy that we collectively go through, along with our own personal struggles that many people experience on the day to day, there's sort of culture around how each generation approaches simply discussing those issues, let alone seeking help for them. 21-year-old Justin Boyle shared with me his thoughts on how his generation views mental health.
You know, I think we definitely are more open to seeking mental health services. I think even just like something as simple as the amount of like things like BetterHelp and like therapy ads that you've seen in like the past, let's say like 5 years since we've even, you know, been consumers has been like higher than any humans ever. So I think our culture just, you know, like pushes it overall a lot more. And we just happen to be people who are coming into our own at this time. So it's kind of, you know, just being a little bit more normalized for us. And I think we definitely also realize that things are hard. Things are irregular relative to, you know, how things have gone in the country, in the world for like the past 40 years. I think we're living in some, you know, times that we can all agree on, even though we just got here, that are like pretty, you know, not normal.
That was Justin Boyle, a Gen Zer, sharing his thoughts on how his generation views mental health. So how are Gen Zers coping with hardships?
Well, a lot of them are talking about it on social media and sharing with each other and talking about going to therapy, which is really cool. That's one of the positives, I think, with some of this technology is, I don't know about you, but I did not grow up with therapy being a normalized thing.
Yeah, it was or a faux pas. Like, we don't talk about that.
Yeah, or it's indicating that something is, like, real, really bad and we should, like, maybe just put it under the rug and, like, let them deal with it.
Yeah.
And so not even just therapy, though. What I love about Gen Z is, yeah, they're like, yeah, everybody, but going to therapy is not a big deal. There should be no stigma. But they also just are willing to talk about emotional issues. They're willing to talk about the suicide rate. They're willing to talk about depression, anxiety, like things that are the stats are telling us and people are telling, like it's such a common experience.
Yeah.
It's something that really can, you know, bring a bunch of us together. Mm-hmm. And yet for so many generations, it's been very, very difficult to talk about. And so that's one of the strengths that I really think that Gen Z lend that we can learn from.
Is this openness then to having these conversations among Gen Zers when it comes to mental health, is that the kind of silver lining to all the things that Gen Zers have been through?
I think you could definitely see it that way for sure. They're even with all the little things we've talked about and how they haven't been given the chance to risk, you know, all these different things, like they're still finding ways to develop resiliency. And that is amazing.
And I also read there was a decline in suicide rates even among this generation.
Yeah.
Can you tell me more about that?
Oh, like just even the last couple, I think this is just the last couple of years. Like we said before, between 2009, 2019, and even into obviously the pandemic, suicide rates were climbing pretty astronomically for U.S. youth. But in the last couple of years, it's been going down it's just by a couple of percents, like, you know, down to like 4% versus what it was before. But like even down 4% from what it was is how many lives.
It's a good direction.
It's such a good direction. And I hope that we can continue to move that way. But our Gen Z population, they are a big part of bringing awareness and also support to each other. And that's going to be encouraging for the research. That's going to encourage, like, this is our future, right? So I'm really excited to see what they bring to this field and to this world to continue making it, you know, a better place for people to live.
So most people can say they have someone in their life that's Gen Z, either by being a parent or guardian to one, educating or instructing them, or even working alongside them. Like, Gen Zers are in the workplace now. Huh? How would you recommend older generations support or show care to Gen Z people?
Yeah, I think number one, the word that comes to my mind is just be curious. If you are experiencing the Gen Z stare and it feels disrespectful, or if it feels just confusing, it's really throwing you off, just to be curious and ask about their experience. For the most part, they're really, really willing to share. And so I think that continued invitation into communication is one that many of the older generation will be surprised to see that they'll take you up on it.
Ashley Wilkinson is a clinical site supervisor for Provident Behavioral Health. Ashley, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
If you're a Gen Z and would like to share your experience, we want to hear from you. You can email us at talk@stlpr.org, or instead of Facebook, hit us up on Instagram at STLOnAir. And before we go, we want your help for an upcoming show. In 1 month, millions of migratory birds will fly through the St. Louis region as they head south for the winter. It's an exciting time for birders, and that's exactly who we want to hear from. Where have you made your most exciting bird sightings? What do you love about the birding process? Email us at talk@stlpr.org. You can also call and leave us a voicemail at 314-516-6397. That's 314-516-NEWS.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.